right.
The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, the VSiN app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, and of course the DK Network live from Bar Canada at the D. Downtown Las Vegas, Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, producer number nine, so much more than a producer. What's happening, man?
Not much. Due for a haircut. Haircut day? Your haircut?
Haircut day.
Haircut day?
I mean, look at me, for God's sakes. Very
Tuesday's Gil's haircut day.
He's due. You know, they say like an athlete's due. I'm due. We got football to talk from yesterday. The final two games in what was super wild card weekend. Though if betting didn't exist, it was hardly super. The entire set of games.
Okay, that's fair to say.
Thank God for betting.
Between the NBA being on all day and the NFL, it was the greatest Monday ever.
Oh, dude. Give me that 2-2-2 format every year.
Every year.
Every year. I had no idea the Emmys were on yesterday either.
I had no idea.
No idea.
That's breaking news to me right now.
My brother texted him. I'm like, I had no clue. We'll talk about these two games momentarily. Drew Dinsick will join us. Drew Dinsick had himself a heck of a week, a heck of a weekend in the NFL. I did not. I had a great regular season. Hopefully, if the Niners and Ravens do their things, I'm going to have a great finish. Some futures cash this year as well. But I did not have a good wild card weekend. We'll talk about all the futures that I have pending and yours as well coming up on the show. And we'll talk a little college basketball with Kai McKeon from Three Man Weave as well. I usually do my formula after the Super Bowl. We'll take a first glance into it. Not the full formula of who can win a college basketball title, but we'll get Kai's opinions on the group of teams that qualify or on the cusp of qualifying. First of all, the games yesterday. Let's begin in chronological order, and we'll talk about the division round lines, which I was either dead on yesterday or a half point off on, as it turns out, for all four division games coming up this weekend, which I always view, Kelly, as like the last real weekend of football after next weekend. It feels like
Don't say it, Kel.
A little bit of depression sets in where you're like, wait a minute, there's only three more games in the season. Except for you Pro Bowl fans, there's four.
That's right. Fire up the dodgeball odds, baby.
Pittsburgh at Buffalo. I can't really be blamed for this one. This is the bet that a lot of us who bet Pittsburgh were stuck with. We thought this was going to be an inclement weather. So just a bad break. Steelers end up losing by 14. Back door was open.
Yeah.
Mason Rudolph had no idea how to get
there. I was rooting for you there.
Oh, God.
I hit my team total over, but it was even for those of us that, you know, I guess I wasn't on the Bills side, but I was on the Bills side, right? Like sitting there watching that game yesterday, within the first 15 minutes, you're like, this game is completely different and completely, it so much more benefits Buffalo Bills than it would have 24 hours
before it. Brutal. Bills win at 31-17. They get the cover. Total soars over. The game started. Pittsburgh punted. Buffalo then quickly 10 plays, 80 yards. Allen to Knox from nine out. 7-0. 7:02 left in the first quarter. They trade a couple three and outs. Then Pittsburgh, first play of their ensuing drive. First and 10 at their own 18. Rudolph to Pickens. Hit by Aaron Johnson. He fumbles. The Bills, it's ruled an incomplete pass on the field, but you knew in commercial that was totally a fumble, and it was. They overturned it, recovered by Terrell Bernard. Buffalo took one play after that, set up at the Steelers 29. Allen to Kincaid, 14-0 Bills. 4:10 left first quarter. What you're talking about, Kelly, immediately setting in there. You're like, oh, so this is how this is going to go.
Yeah.
This would have been different. By the way, Pittsburgh with a three and out, another three and out right after that. That was the sequence you may remember where on the third down play, Tony Romo gleefully shouted, I think it's intercepted, Jim. And then Jim Nance goes, they're saying it hit the ground. He goes, it did, but it looked like it was intercepted, Jim. Easy, Tony. Buffalo three and out. Then Pittsburgh, first play, first and 10 at their own nine. Remember, they're down 14-0 here. Rudolph goes to Freiermuth for 33. This was just, Kelly and I were texted after this. What the hell are we watching here?
I was so glad when you texted me. I was sitting on the couch so confused.
I'm like, he goes to Freiermuth for 33. Freiermuth clearly fumbles the football. It's called out of bounds, and it looks like Baylen Specter of the Bills recovers it inbounds. And they go, and then, you know, it's challenged, as the Bills should.
Yep.
And they come back, and they say the call stands. Now, the whole time Jim Nance is saying, I think it right there, it grazed off his helmet. I'm looking. I'm like, I don't see that, Jim.
So I'm not going to say he was wrong.
He might have been
right. But you couldn't see
that. You couldn't
tell. So therefore, they must have decided. I mean, we didn't see any more clarification on this, or at least
they must have decided Baylen Specter was out of bounds, but yes, he wasn't.
That he didn't recover it in time enough, Gil, before he rolled out of bounds.
Zero. There was zero sense to this. How is that not a fumble? And by the way, if that's actually a fumble and is ruled as such, good God, what does this become, you know, even worse than it already was? As it turns out, Pittsburgh matriculated after that, and then Rudolph threw the pick at the goal line. Remember, he threw it to Kair Elam. Kair Elam with the pick in the end zone.
That was a crazy drive, because you had Kair getting burned right with the the penalty. He had a couple of the bad plays on the drive, and then that interception just kind of falls in his lap in the end zone.
Oh, it was brutal if you had Pittsburgh right there. And then Buffalo goes 8 plays, 80 yards. Allen for 52. That was his 52-yard scamper down the middle of the field. 21-0 Bills, a little more than halfway through the second quarter. Pittsburgh had a 3-and-out. And then remember, Buffalo tried to add a 49-yard field goal from Tyler Bass. That's where the game sort of turned. It was blocked by Montrevious Adams. Nick Herbig recovered it way downfield. I mean, that thing was blocked to the heavens.
Yeah.
Sam Martin, the Bills punter, hurt his hamstring on the pursuit there. Anyway, Pittsburgh did turn that into a touchdown. 5 plays, 33 yards. Rudolph to Deontay from 12. It was 21-7. And then Pittsburgh and Tomlin, they stupidly sort of let the clock roll down with Martin perhaps hurt. They didn't know if he was hurt or not. And so it goes to halftime. They should have used their timeouts there and tried to do something with it. Third quarter starts. Again, Buffalo's up 21-7 now. And Buffalo 3-and-out. Martin did punt. He was fine. Boswell, he kicks a field goal, 21-10. Then Buffalo had 4th and inches at their own 45. Allen did convert it. That led to a Bass 45-yard field goal. So they traded field goals. 24-10 Buffalo. 1:32 left third quarter. Pittsburgh, 12 plays, 75 yards, 6 minutes. Rudolph to Calvin Austin for a touchdown. They cut it to 7 with 10:32 left in the fourth quarter. 24-17. But then this happened. For those of us who had Pittsburgh, it's just like, and obviously Pittsburgh Steelers fans, Buffalo. Two plays. The second play, a non-PI on an uncatchable ball that got called a defensive hold on Miles Jack, which was like the officials bailing themselves out of having to not call uncatchable.
Yeah.
Because they threw the flag for PI. They're like, well, the ball did land in row 3. Why don't we just call it a hold or something? Two plays after that. Pardon me. Then a late unnecessary roughness on Jack where he got flagged just as Allen slid, which both Nance and Romo and my man, the referee consultant whose name has escaped me right now, are like, oh, yeah, you got to call that. Absolutely. I'm like, what are you talking about? You have to call that. He's already committed. There's nothing you can do there. How are you flagged for playing professional football?
I mean, that's that bang quarterback slide one that like you see it called a lot. It's just it always goes back to what's the guy supposed to do?
That gray area should not ever be called. Anyway, two plays later, Allen to Khalil Shakir for 17 after breaking a would-be Fitzpatrick tackle, by the way, 31-17. And then Pittsburgh would at 4th and 3 at their own 32. This is where, you know, it gets dicey. Rudolph intended for Pickens. Romo, by the way, before this play on 4th and 3 at their own 32 with Pittsburgh down 14, Romo says, I think this 4th down might be the game. Thanks, Tony. Incomplete. No PI on Johnson called. Sterator thinks it's correct that it's no PI. He's wrapped around him. Anyway, Bass, for those of folks who might have had Pittsburgh plus 14.5 in game, which I know a lot of people who did, Bass, 37-yard field goal, way wide.
Yeah.
And it remains 34-17 at that point. 31-17, pardon me. Back door open, 1:57 left in the fourth quarter. Pittsburgh gets it to the 25 when the clock expires. Like, Rudolph never took shots except for that one.
3 plays beforehand, Romo goes, I think the Steelers still alive here, Jim.
Right after he had said, this one's for the game. Yeah, he goes, hey, you got to move quicker because then you got to leave time for the onside kick. He's gone from spectacular to not really that good.
Yes. I hate to hate on these guys, but like Jim Nance is talking earlier in the broadcast too about how they've basically been locked in the hotel for 3 days. It's like, Tony, do some prep, man.
I think it's intercepted, Jim. They're saying it hit the ground. It did, but it looked like it was intercepted, Jim. So Buffalo advances to host The divisional game on Sunday afternoon, which is really the marquee matchup of the four. The Chiefs on the road. This is the someone said on Twitter yesterday, this is going to be the Mike Tomlin has never had a losing season of the week. Patrick Mahomes. I don't know if you know this. Patrick Mahomes is having his first road playoff game.
I don't know. Whoever told you that, absolutely dead on. Great call. Are going to hear that on every single broadcast, every show on this network, on every other network that you could possibly think of.
I guess Bills minus 2.5, and it is minus 2.5 on the Bills here. And remember, these two teams played once this year already. That was the Kadarius Toney lined off sides game where Buffalo went into Kansas City. It was the beginning of Buffalo's flourish at the end of the season where they beat the Chiefs 20-17. It was the Latavius Murray play that was ruled a catch. And a fumble. Remember, it was incomplete, really, but they ruled it a catch. Fumble didn't lead it anything for Buffalo, but it was really known for the Travis Kelce pitchback to Rashee Rice touchdown, but Kadarius Toney was offsides on that play, so the Bills won it. I think that's the appropriate line, and I cannot wait for this football game.
Yeah, I can't wait either. I did take a small piece of Bills 2.5 when it looked like this was rising near 3 last night. This has come back and settled, though. We're pretty much 2.5, juice 2.5s everywhere. I think the one thing, one thing I'm really worried about takeaway from that game is this was another game with a ton of Buffalo injuries in the defense.
So banged up.
We had 3 linebackers, multiple secondary guys go down in that game.
Yeah. We're saying that about the Rams. If the Rams had advanced, how banged up they would have been. You'd say that for a bunch of teams. By the way, the other one, Baltimore now hosting Houston, I'd guess 10. It's 9.5. They played week 1 where Baltimore beat them. Don't know how much you can read into that. We'll come back NFC side on the other side next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Start your morning with a daily dose of winning strategies, insider tips, and the latest buzz with the free VSiN daily newsletter. In today's newsletter, highlighted. All kinds of things.
That's right. We got Adam Burke, Zach Cohen breaking down divisional round for you. All kinds of good stuff in there.
That's right. Get expert analysis and the latest odds delivered straight to your inbox. Absolutely free. Visit VSiN.com/newsletter to subscribe. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin. So, you know, bottom line, again, bookending the division round next week are the AFC games. It's Houston at Baltimore in the early Saturday window. Houston's birthright. Buddhist man with the great joke again. If Houston advances to the Super Bowl, they will be moving the Super Bowl to the early window on Saturday morning. But Baltimore is a 9.5-point favorite. And then the marquee matchup of the weekend, the 3-2 in the AFC, closes the weekend in Buffalo. Chiefs, 2.5-point dogs on the road. I don't know if you know this, the Patrick Mahomes first road playoff game at Buffalo. Do you have a play on the side on either that you like?
I did bet the Bills small.
Bills small.
Yeah, I bet the Bills small last night. Those injuries do concern me. I think this would be a bigger bet for me if, what did we have? What did they have? 3 linebackers go out again last night. A couple secondary players. I mean, look, it sounds like Rasul Douglas could be back, but then you could be down corners 2 and 3 for this game. So I'm definitely concerned once again this season about the Buffalo Bills defense, which had gotten better through some of those after some of those initial injuries.
I also don't know how resounding of a win that was yesterday. I mean, it was. Yeah. Yes, there was the Freiermuth boondoggle, but it was the Rudolph pick subsequent to that on the goal line. It was that initial fumble from Pickens that set up another Buffalo touchdown.
Yep.
So, I mean, that's potentially a 14-point swing right there. I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised with either team advancing in this. I really wouldn't. I mean, I know that's not committal on this, but I think that line is exactly where it should be.
I think it's going to be a great game, and I won't be shocked at all when Patrick Mahomes is an underdog, takes all my money. Yes.
Yeah, of course not. The other game yesterday, Philly at Tampa Bay to close out Super Wild Card weekend. Tampa Bay destroys Philly, and I could not have been more wrong with my flimsiest of handicaps, which is the Eagles have to be able to beat this team, right?
It was a flyer bet. Whatever.
No, they don't. The Eagles crash and burn. And this game, it's not even worth going through it play by play. It was just a bevy of bad angles and missed tackles on defense for Philly. And by the way, Tampa Bay dropped a lot of passes in this game. But Philly had only run the ball five times for 17 yards in the first half. That was my, I remember at halftime, I was like, well, the one thing that you're supposed to be able to count on with this team is your offensive line. They weren't even running it at all. Tampa Bay had at halftime 113 yards after the catch, 113 yards of yak, 63 yards after contact. As they took a 16-9 lead into the half, that was it. But they were only up by a touchdown.
Yeah, Eagles
with
got
all
that,
of that.
They got that late touchdown. Right, went for two, didn't get it, and then you're like, okay, they might be in this.
Well,
a bit.
If that was not the most ominous sign that your Tuchus push didn't work,
yeah.
Like once that's your thing and it didn't work, and so I mean. Absolutely. Tampa Bay just ran them off the field then in the second half. We're just there's you know, good on Tampa. We're going to do our ridiculous division round power rankings.
Yeah.
This just in, Tampa's going to be 8 for me. But they played. I mean, it's more interesting. Obviously, sports talk radio and all sports media is going to be around the Eagles today. And I think it is a fascinating topic because, first of all, we can answer the question because I got asked this. Who would you, my brother texted me, he goes, what's worse, the Eagles' demise or the Cowboys crashing out? And I said the Cowboys because they're filled with talent on both sides of the ball. They have such expectations every year. Jerry's out there front and center.
Yeah.
And it's just an amazing explosion to witness, especially the way they did the Packers, to witness it every year. And it's just fascinating to watch in that respect.
It's every year, man. Like,
it's every
it's
year.
Just, it's blindsided every year.
But the Eagles one is fascinating from a... Here's the thing. I read this long piece where famously the Eagles were 10-1 and they end up losing five out of the last six regular season games, and then they crash and burn at Tampa Bay yesterday, if I can use that phrase again.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no really... That's the best... Like... It's just mind-boggling to think that this team that many people thought lost the Super Bowl on a bad call, right, last year, and then we're 10-1 this year, and this kind of a demise is so spectacular that last week I was comparing it to the only thing that we could really comp it with was the 1986 New York Jets. For those of us who are of a certain age, some 37 years ago, the Jets, in a 16-game season, started out the year 10-1, Paul McGuire, who was an NBC analyst at that time, famously predicted they would lose every game the rest of the year. They did. He then predicted they would win in the wild card game, which they did before they lost in the divisional round. A Jets team that ended up with Pat Ryan at quarterback. I thought this Eagles team would have that one blip up too and win the wild card game. It did not happen. That's the only like historical comp, but I would argue this is far worse because they, again, were so close to winning the Super Bowl against the Kansas City Chiefs. There's no shame in not winning that. And even for those of us who acknowledge, I guess this is my real point with this, I'm still not completely understanding what's gone on here. I've read articles. Tim McManus, who's the Eagles beat reporter at ESPN, wrote this great piece yesterday I read. And he really focuses on the toxicity, my word, not his, but really the dysfunction between Sirianni, Ben Johnson, and Jalen Hurts as a head coach, OC, quarterback dynamic, and how they're just not on the same page, unlike how they were with Shane Steichen. And maybe that's part of this, is losing your coordinators is a big deal.
Yeah.
Shane Steichen perhaps being the bigger of the two in this case. The defense, by the way, you watched the defense yesterday. You know, that touchdown where, you know, there was many of these, but the Trey Palmer touchdown that put the Bucs up 25-9 yesterday, where Bradbury missed the tackle and then Byard just whiffed, and Troy Aikman was like, I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, they're running into each other. It's pathetic.
They got old really quickly on defense. So I read this whole article by Tim McManus, and you read it, and you're still like, okay. Even I, when they were 10-1, right? Like, I felt like they should have lost minimum three of those games, if not four, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Buffalo, they should have lost. They should have lost the first Dallas game, and they should have lost at least one of the two to Washington.
Yeah, and you were never overly high on them all year.
But even if they were 7-4 and not 10-1, we would have said, hey, they're 7-4. they've had some tough losses. They're still a really good 7-4. How do you go from that team to this team in such a short period of time? And even the articles describing the dysfunction or, you know, the defense getting old or whatever, there's no equivalent for this. There's, you can't, even if it's the confluence of all the events, there's a deep rot happening here that is not getting communicated. And I don't know if Sirianni survives it or not. Your guess is as good as mine. Jeffrey Lurie tends to be pretty quick with these kinds of decisions. So we'll see if that's the case. But
it's shocking.
The NFC East as a whole, just what a performance by both the Cowboys and the Eagles.
It's shocking. I mean, I think that there's, I think you hit on at the end. I mean, I think at the end of the day, we're probably going to look back at this as just a combination of a ton of things. I mean, it just, you know, for this game last night, you don't have A.J. Brown. I think that's absolutely massive. I think we're going to end up learning that that Jalen Hurts has been playing through way more injuries, you know, than we even know about. Him carrying the ball, what, once last night, I think is a pretty good sign of that, too. I mean, at a certain point, I think you just start running. You start running design quarterback runs in that game when you have no pass game going, but clearly they don't want to do that with him. I think there's that. I'm actually more fascinated in the defensive changes that they made. When Sean Desai got promoted, right? Matt Patricia gets promoted. Sean Desai demoted, and there's been all these rumors, right? Is that coming from Sirianni? Is that coming from the front office? And your team's a complete disaster if the front office is making coaching decisions like that in the middle of a year that the head coach is not on board with. And there's been all those conversations, everything that you brought up on the offensive side of the ball.
By the way, I said Ben Johnson. I meant Brian Johnson for the Eagles. But all right, in the end, so the AFC games bookend the division games next week. San Francisco's got the late game on Saturday. They are, in fact, 10-point favorites, as we guessed, hosting the Packers. And then the Lions, I said 6.5 hosting the Bucks. It's 6 with the Lions hosting the Bucks, and I think that's about right. And I think the Lions get the best of it here, getting to play this team. And I think Dan Campbell and crew are going to advance. I don't know. I was really hoping it was going to be the Eagles, and then I would have laid the 2.5 or the 3, whatever it ended up being, against the Eagles real quick on the Lions. I don't like this just as quite as much, but I think I may end up laying the points with Detroit.
Yeah, this was pretty quick. As soon as that game was ending, was looking to check Lions. I bet a 5.5 juiced. On the Lions side, there was one out there, so was able to grab that early. I do like that. I think the Bucks have their own problems. And they just went up against a very, very dysfunctional Philadelphia team last night.
A bizarrely so, bizarrely so dysfunctional team. More to talk about on this on the other side with Drew Dinsick, who had himself a great Super Wild Card weekend. His thoughts on the rot of the Eagles and his picks for the divisional round. He's also our mega pod guest this week as well. That's on the other side. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
With Omaha Steaks, you'll fall in love at first bite with their tender steaks, juicy burgers, air-chilled chicken, and more. You're going to love every bite. It's Omaha Steaks guarantee. And for a limited time, when you go to omahasteaks.com/VSiN, you'll get 4 free air-chilled boneless chicken breasts and 4 free rich, juicy boneless pork chops with your order. Minimum purchase may apply. How about that? Skill Alexander, it's Kelly Bidlew, live from Bar Canada here at the D. We get tweets at Beating the Book. Dom Perignon. I'm not mispronouncing it. That's how he spelled it. Travel back in time to November 1st, 2023. You ask a sportsbook director to post a prop that there will be 3 coaches fired in the NFC East at the end of the year. What odds do they post? Yikes. If you believe that Sirianni and McCarthy will join Rivera, I mean, my God.
Just give me a yes-no price at the beginning of the year on Nick Sirianni being fired.
Oh, my God. We'll see. We'll see. By the way, Jason Kelce announcing his retirement, his intention to retire here at the end this morning after that game last night. John Fitzgibbon, so either former Rams quarterback Jared Goff or former Rams quarterback Baker Mayfield will be in the NFC Championship game. He did play for the Rams. He did have a cup of coffee with him. Let's see. Trevor Warwick. What about the Allen fake slide? He should have been marked down as soon as he started to pull up. Well, we talked about that fake slide, how it puts the defense in a pickle. And then Oh, Kevin Ryan. Gil, how many times do we have to hear Romo say, you're exactly right, Jim, during a broadcast? 3JackH3131. Hey, watched Kenan push Iga in the first set last night. Any plays today for Down Under? I'll have him at beeson.com/picks. Yes, I think I was appropriately nervous for the Iga versus Sophia Kenin match last night. And Sophia Kenin, the 2020 Australian Open champion, did give Iga, you know, a little wake-up call. Like, hey, you're about to go through a gauntlet. Let's wake you up from the very first set. But Iga got through it last night in her first-round match. Drew Dinsick will have thoughts on both football and tennis. We turn to him now. He is the host of not just the Deep Dive podcast, which he does with his buddy Andy Molitor, but also NBC Sports' Bet the Edge podcast. He joins us now at @whale_capper. Good morning to you, Drew. How you doing, man?
Doing tremendously well. It's a big week, Gil. Got people. Yeah, people are buzzing. There may be a Megapod appearance this there, week. I don't mean to spoil the surprise, but a lot of people have been asking: Is there going to be a divisional week appearance on the Megapod? And I believe yes.
I had my ear to the streets, Drew, and I heard the same thing. What other? You better actually put my ear down on the pavement.
Deafening. Yeah, it's deafening. The closer you get to the street, yeah,
it's palpable. what other cliches can we use? yes, that is tomorrow, by the way, divisional round. And Drew coming off what I think, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, was a spectacular super wild card week for you.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Big winning week for me. I was, if the Rams had gotten one more first down and kind of kicked a game winning field goal and kept that total under 51. and then if the Steelers had backdoored the plus 10, we're like shopping for yachts this morning, but not to be, but that said, I was pretty excited about the results overall. And honestly, like the quality of football was pretty outstanding. The entertainment level, the excitement level of NFL football throughout the regular season was pretty, it wasn't one of the most memorable seasons. I'll just kind of put it politely that way, I guess. But I thought overall the playoff games were incredible. And, you know, the outcome of having CJ Stroud and Jordan Love kind of step into the ring as like, no, we're for real. Like we can perform at the highest level in the crucible of playoff pressure. Like that's just a pretty outstanding outcome for the sport broadly. And I think these matchups that we have for the divisional round are awesome. I know we have two massive favorites with, home teams and the one seeds coming off of a bye week, but I think those games are going to be super competitive. And then Bucks, Lions, Chiefs, Bills, like that's going to be a really fun Sunday. This was about the most entertaining Final Four I think we could have constructed in terms of just like, just entertainment factor. Dallas, I guess, would have been in the mix instead of Tampa. But that said, I'm glad we get to send Green Bay to San Francisco. So, it was a great wild card weekend and very fired up for the divisional round. I guess, what else? Obviously, the Australian Open's going on. Round one is finally in the books after a three-day marathon.
Yes.
I'm at the loopy stage, of trying to watch and handicap three sports at once. Next week, I'll be in the kind of dragging my head out of a ditch stage, I guess. This is a lot of fun this time of year.
It is. You're exactly right. It is the loopy stage where we're just watching tennis way too late into the night than one should. We'll get to the tennis here momentarily. Let's go back to football. So you had all the dogs except for Miami this week. Pittsburgh, you would not have bet on had there not been weather. Had you known that it would be rescheduled, would you have bet the Steelers?
I took a little stake down, actually, once it didn't move as much as I thought it would have once they moved the game. Both the total and the line not really recalibrating for what was going to be very different weather conditions was kind of surprising to me. I know the total ultimately got bet up, but at first there was it was a long window where you could get some decent bets down on over at prices that were like clearly going to go one way. And then, yeah, the side never moved. 10, well, one of the reasons to bet 10 with the Steelers was because you had this phenomenally low total and it was going to be chaos conditions. And ultimately, it was beautiful weather. And, you know, Steelers still almost got there. Like, they took points off the board with the end zone pick. They gave the Bills a cheap touchdown with the George Pickens fumble. They played poorly in a lot of phases of the game and they were still kind of right there, which, you know, maybe had something to do with the injuries the Bills sustained in the game, or maybe the Bills just aren't quite as good as the market thinks. Yeah. You know, certainly the fact that this was opened around a three and you know, people were pretty anxious to get involved with Kansas City and we're staring at a 2.5 there now. Is interesting because I really thought that with the Bills kind of, you know, their finish to the season, the enthusiasm around that team, the number of people that believe that they can make a run to the Super Bowl, win the Super Bowl, holding futures, believing in Josh Allen being elite. Like, you know, there's a lot of, I thought, sentiment that may have induced people to play Buffalo in this game. On top of the fact that, you know, a month ago, Kansas City was -1.5 at home against the Bills, and Kansas City probably should have won that game. So it's surprising to me that we saw this market come in pretty hot and heavy on Kansas City. And I guess that has something to do with the expectation of the Buffalo Bills being without a couple of key defenders. But still, you know, still a little bit of a shock that the home Buffalo Bills aren't getting any support. And I guess I should add to the handicap, the rest disadvantage might be meaningful. Chiefs with the 2 days extra to prepare for this game.
Yes.
Meanwhile, Bills coming off of, you know, they're going to have a short week just 1 day less recovery. But when you get those kind of injuries, that might ultimately be a pretty important factor.
What did you bet already then for the divisional round?
Right now, all I've got is Houston and Green Bay plus the points. I am kind of waiting for additional information on injury situations on the Sunday games before getting involved. But at 6, I have a slight lean to Detroit. And at 2.5, I have to play the Bills, even though I was, again, like kind of entirely mentally prepared to, you know, to go to war here with Kansas City at 3 or 3.5. Price point at 2.5 says I got a bet Buffalo there.
Yeah, I got the slight lean to Detroit as well. So the big spread games on Saturday where the Ravens and Niners show up, you're taking the points in both of them. You just feel that number is how obviously you feel it's too high. How high do you feel it is? Like, by what margin?
Yes. So my fare on Texans Ravens is 7.5. So decent margin there, but obviously you're not crossing any keys going from 9.5 to 7.5. My fare for Green Bay is 7. So that one's a little bit bigger. And I guess the Green Bay enthusiasm, I don't think it's misplaced. Like, I really do think that offense is just clicking absolute, synergy right now. Matt LaFleur, I would expect, is going to spend a lot of time studying that Baltimore Ravens tape from Christmas night about how the Ravens elected to attack the San Francisco 49ers defense. And I think, honestly, the throws that Jordan Love's making and the weapons that they have available to attack the Niners is going to be pretty effective. The pass protection that the Packers have been getting from that offensive line has been superlative. So realistically, you can neutralize the kind of the one game-breaking chaos factor that the Niners defense brings to the table. And, you know, if they're not getting home with their pass rush, then there's definitely soft spots you can attack that defense. So Packers, I realistically think, can go score for score with the Niners. And depending on weather, that one could be your biggest scoreline of the week.
Can I ask you a Megapod question real quick? One word answer.
Yeah.
If I tell you either the Niners or Ravens lost, if I come to you from the future, which team lost outright?
Trick question. They both lose.
Coming back, more Drew Dinsick on the other side. Cop out. Next on A Numbers Game at Base of the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL playoffs, bringing you an offer that'll help make the playoffs electrifying. New customers can bet $5 on any game and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code Vegas. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code Vegas. The crown is yours. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, live from Barcanada, the barrage here at the D, downtown Las Vegas. Drew Dinsick, kind enough to join us for a second segment. Whale underscore Cappers, where you can find him on Twitter. Deep Dive and Bet the Edge podcasts is where you can listen to him. And on the Megapod, those streets are talking. There's a buzz in the air. It'll be on the Megapod tomorrow for a division round playoff. Before we get to your Australian Open plays for the day, and I'm very excited to hear what they are, couple minutes, little sports talk radio on the Philadelphia Eagles. Because I was saying earlier on the show, I'm like, you know, I'm not trying to be prisoner of the moment. I don't think I ever remember a comp to this, a collapse quite like this. And I'm not really getting the explanation that is satisfying me. Because it's, okay, coordinator, coach, quarterback dynamic, defense getting old, injuries. Like, it's a confluence of events. I get it. But there just seems to be something else going on. What's your take on them?
Well, to really kind of postmortem the Eagles, you got to go back to last season. The Eagles were breakout, shocker, one seed. Right.
Yeah.
Like, you know, going into the year, people were kind of like 10-1, one seed. Yeah. All right. I'll take some Eagles. Yeah. Their schedule is crazy easy. Like, if they catch a couple breaks, they could, you know, they could get the one seed. I could see it. They got the one seed. People kind of re-anchored exactly how to rate that team. They upgraded them pretty aggressively, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, even though really the defensive performances we saw last year came at the hands of playing a very weak schedule of quarterbacks. Like, they just played nobody who could really throw the ball last year until they ran into, you know, Pat Mahomes in the Super Bowl, and he cooked them. And so I think ultimately it was a defense that was, number one, playing poor quarterbacks, and number two, oh, I forgot about this. They were playing with an exceptionally positive game state in almost every time out. Right? This was a team that was scoring they were scoring 20 points in every second quarter. And it's like, okay, well, hey, guess what? The strength of our team is we have wave after wave of pass rusher, and we have a double digit lead to protect in the second half. Like, hey, what do you know? Our defense looks great. Like, yeah, surprise. You know, they're facing must pass teams in the second half of games with good pass rushers. And so it was kind of just a perfect story for that defense to overperform, I think, last year. And coming into this year, they had a bunch of attrition at the linebacker level through free agency, right? Like, they had a very tough decision because half their defense went into free agency, and they were like, okay, I guess we'll, secondary is more important than linebacker, so we'll bring back Slay and Bradbury. We'll have to let CJ GJ go, and then we'll lose, you know, the linebacker core, they let walk out the door. Well, they backfilled the linebacker core poorly. Partially, they kind of, I think, at least swung a little too heavily on the Georgia defenders in the draft, who were good as a unit, but apparently need a little bit of time to develop as NFL players. And, you know, the other kind of players they signed to backfill at the down the spine of that defense just were not very good. And so then they come into this season with a much tougher schedule. I mean, everyone that previewed the Eagles this season said, whoa. Thanksgiving to Christmas.
6 day
gauntlet. Best of luck, Philadelphia.
6 week gauntlet. That's right. Six week gauntlet. Yep.
Just a nasty stretch through that portion of the schedule. And sure enough, when did they they overperformed at the beginning with a couple of wins that were a little bit lucky, and they were really healthy. And then they kind of really, you know, ran into the buzzsaw late when they were in that extremely difficult portion of their schedule. So, you know, it was a little bit predictable that they were going to swoon. And I think the makeup of the team, and maybe, you know, kind of the personalities in the locker room leaders, like, for whatever it was worth, they didn't see it coming, I suppose, and they didn't take it well. Like, this group, at least together, hasn't lost much, and the losing definitely seemed to kind of poison the water, you know, poison the well a little bit in that locker room.
Yes.
And, you know, they didn't fight. They didn't, like, come together and fight hard to close the season. They got, you know, they gave up a double-digit lead at halftime to the Cardinals and then got run off the field by the Giants in the final week of the season. And it's like, that's not the recipe for, you know, how you want to kind of, you know, prepare yourself for a playoff run. And so, you know, it was a little bit, you know, kind of, I don't want to say predictable, but like it wasn't shocking that, that it all fell apart. And like, that was all rational analysis. Here's the tinfoil hat thinking. Like, anyone who cares and watches football and knows about football and like has seen the work that, you know, seen the resume of Matt Patricia would tell you he has no business taking over a defense that is struggling and expecting it to all of a sudden turn around and succeed. And yet that is what Sirianni did. And was there a little bit of Howie and Sirianni knew that things were kind of falling apart and like they elevate, you know, Patricia so that he's now like the clean fall guy in this? Maybe. But Patricia's job, you know, his performance in terms of scheming the defense down the stretch was like LOL bad. And I mean, that's the easy adjustment to make here now. Like, well, that was the problem. We got rid of Patricia. Like, well, let's regroup for next year. Like, I don't think you can necessarily throw this team out as far as contenders for the next couple of Super Bowls because they do have a young core, assuming that they can, you know, repair whatever is going on with their relationship with AJ Brown because he's massively important to their success. But, you know, that with Hurts healthy and because I'm sure we're going to hear in a week or 2 weeks, oh, Hurts actually had a torn MCL all season and that he's just gone under the knife and they repaired it, right? Like there's
something massive, like that. Massive injury, yeah.
Yeah, something like that's going to trickle out and we're going to be like, oh, that's why he didn't want to run.
Let me interrupt you here, Drew, because I want to get to the other stuff. But the only thing I will push back on that, we'll get to it on the Megapod, but is that point about the poisoning of the well. That's the part, right? That's the part where a normal team doesn't sink to the bottom of the well from losing a few games, but this team did. Let's get to tennis. Yeah. Iga pushed yesterday by Sofia Kenin. I don't think that's a surprise, even to those of us who love Iga. Sofia Kenin is tough. How do you feel about Iga after that performance?
I don't really think you read much into Iga. I think you read more into Kenin. I think it just tells you that Kenin is closer to, it's closer to returning to form than she was last year, which is kind of good for the sport of tennis, but I don't think she's realistically a contender anyway, but good that Iga could fight through that, right? Like there's definitely been moments where she didn't have her A game and she didn't fight through it. She did yesterday and that was great. The rest of the path though, still it does look really, really tough.
Oh yeah,
it really does. Yeah.
It's tough.
She's gonna have her hands full with Danielle freaking Collins. She's gonna have her hands full with Noskova. She's gonna have her hands full with Svitolina, and then she's got to face the boogeyman in Ostapenko probably in the quarterfinals. So,
by the way,
just to get to a semifinal against Rybakina, she's got her work cut out for her.
Great response to our Australian Open podcast. Thank you so much for doing that. There's nothing that I love more than those podcasts talking tennis with you and Dano. Okay, what did you play today in the Australian Open in Melbourne?
Yeah, so we'll kind of rip through the men's side first here. I think the best match of the day on the men's side is going to be Arnaldi, a Demon Hour. I think that one's a lot closer than the market. Market given Demon Hour a really healthy bump for playing at home, I guess. I think Arnaldi +6.5 is a great bet on the handicap. And then I think Taylor Fritz is in a little spot of bother. He's your survivor buster if you're in the survivor pool, in my opinion.
Stop rubbing it in. How did I not play that?
I got Hugo Gaston +7 and a little Hugo Gaston money line at +571. And I think Thomas Martin Echeverry can definitely compete with Gael Monfils. I played his money line at +129. And then on the women's side, just two plays for me, both young, up and coming Russian women. Alina Korneva is definitely kind of having her breakout moment in this tournament. She had a very challenging round one opponent, did well. This is even more challenging as she goes against the Amazonian Beatriz Haddad Maia, who, you know, I think does tend to make a little bit more out of her matches than she ought to. Loves to play the full best of three. But that said, I think Korneva has enough of a game right now to challenge BHM in that contest. It took a little money line at +247 because either she's competitive and is alive and can steal it, or she gets just run off the court. So I think just money line, no handicap there. And then the match of the day, men's or women's, is actually the first one, which is just delightful for those of us who live on the West Coast of the United States, because we get to watch this in prime time, and that is Mira Andreeva against Ons Jabeur. Huge test for Mira Andreeva. Like, this is the year that we were expecting her to break out. She's at that kind of precipice right now where she needs a big win. This would be a big win. And Ons Jabeur, for what it's worth, not necessarily loving the conditions for her, not loving her form. I think Andreeva can get the better of her, and I played her on the money line at -108.
We are simpatico on at least one of those on the ladies' side. Let's put it that way. Clippers are your NBA play today also?
Yeah, only bet in the NBA is Clips. Okay. And honestly, I'm kind of speculating. Okay. We're going to hear some surprise news that SGA not going.
Thank you, Drew. Coming back.